This is Haystack Help Radio on KLZ 560. Haystack Help Radio is powered by HaystackHelp.com. Finding help can be like finding a needle in a haystack, but with HaystackHelp.com, finding the needle just got easier. Now, Haystack Help Radio with Scott Whatley on KLZ 560.
Welcome to Protect Your Legacy. Again, my name is Scott Whatley, and we thank you for being with us. Our show is brought to you by Blake Harris Law. Please check out that website, BlakeHarrisLaw.com, and the number 833-ASK-BLAKE. And with that, we will welcome estate planning attorney Blake Harris. Blake, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Scott. Great to be back on the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. It is great to have you back on. And I tell you, Blake, you know, time passes so quick. We look at now, we're already into summer from the first of the year, and kind of brings me to my point today a little bit of just, then we're going to get into our topic kind of about common questions about estate planning, but just going through what I went through over the last few months with my father and then talking to more people now about loved ones passing and the untimely deaths and young people passing away. I tell you, it's easy to say you never know, but man, when you never know and you've got no plan whatsoever, boy, it just throws undue turmoil on the whole family, doesn't it?
Yes, it can be a very eye-opening event for everyone. I mean, for one, certainly grieving the loss of a loved one is certainly a very difficult process, but also add to that, not having a clear place and plan can make a difficult time even more difficult. So let's talk about how to avoid
absolutely
part of that situation.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
So an ounce of prevention is certainly an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of the cure. And this is certainly true when it comes to estate planning. What is estate planning, you may ask? Estate planning is a process of arranging your financial affairs so that in the event that you become incapacitated or pass away, the individual or individuals that you have selected receive their inheritance at the time and in the manner that you want them to receive their inheritance.
Okay. Now, when people first talk about, you know, an estate plan, let's kind of break it down to, I mean, what all that includes. I think people understand if they've got property and some money in the bank, but what are some other things that might be included that would make up that estate plan?
Sure. So at the heart of every estate plan or most estate plans is a trust. A trust allows you to do several different things. Number one, a trust allows you to select who receives your property when you pass away, and a trust also allows you to decide who's going to be the guardian for any minor children or disabled children. Now, everything I just mentioned about a trust can also be accomplished with a will, a last will and testament. However, a last will and testament is a ticket to the probate court. Probate is the court process for distributing your estate after you pass away. Probate can be a very expensive process, and it can be a very time-consuming process. By law, probate has to last a minimum of 6 months in Colorado, and in many cases, it lasts a year or more.
Wow.
By creating a revocable living trust, we can completely avoid the need to go through the probate process, and we can make sure that any inheritance that your beneficiaries receive after you pass away is protected. And what I mean by protected, number one, we want to protect the beneficiaries from spending through the money too quickly. If we have any minor beneficiaries or even beneficiaries under the age of 25 or 30, we should consider appointing an independent trustee to manage funds on behalf of that beneficiary until the child is old enough to manage their own financial affairs.
Mm-hmm.
The next protection that you would give our children is protection or beneficiaries is protection from outside parties so that they don't ever lose their inheritance due to a lawsuit, a medical illness, having too much student or credit card debt, or due to a divorce. And with a trust, we can keep all of their inheritance protected from all those potential issues themselves or an outside party.
Okay.
The third part of an estate plan is incapacity planning. And there's a few different documents that everyone should have in place to plan for their incapacity. The first one is a financial power of attorney. A financial power of attorney allows the individual you have selected to make a financial decision in the event that you become incapacitated and can no longer manage your own financial affairs. If you do not have a financial power of attorney in place, then in the event that you become incapacitated, your family is going to have to go through a conservatorship proceeding. This is a very expensive and time-consuming process, which can take months and cost thousands or tens of thousands of dollars. All of this headache can easily be avoided by signing a financial power of attorney. In addition to a financial power of attorney, there are three medical documents which should be created to plan for your potential incapacity. A medical power of attorney to allow someone to make medical decisions on your behalf. A HIPAA authorization. Mm-hmm. HIPAA is a document that gives your agent the ability to access your protected healthcare records in the event that you become incapacitated. You want your family member or your selected agent to be able to access those protected healthcare information and use that to make informed medical decisions. And then the final document is a living will or an advanced healthcare directive, or as it's technically called in Colorado, a declaration as to medical or surgical treatment. This document tells your agent and doctors how you want to be cared for in the event that you're incapacitated, such as if you are permanently incapacitated and you're in a permanent vegetative state, you can inform that you do not want to be kept on life support indefinitely and that you do want to be able to be taken off life support.
Right. And I tell you, Blake, so much to think about here, but when you've got it all spelled out and planned out like this, I was talking with some folks the other day just about kids. Of course, kids just graduated, now 18, and, you know, making their plans for life. And I was talking to some of the parents. I go, man, do you realize something happens to them after this now? And there's an issue at a hospital, and they call. As a parent, even though you're the parent, that HIPAA thing comes into play there, doesn't it? So the parent may think they can do all this, give all this information and make all these decisions, but they really can after that point, right?
Yes, you are absolutely correct. A power of attorney is certainly important for us adults and our aging parents, but also a power of attorney is very important in the event that you have children that are now 18 years of age or older. You want to make sure that they have their documents in place so that they end up hospitalized while they're away at college or away for any reason, that you can still speak with medical professionals on their behalf. You don't want to have to go through an time-consuming, expensive conservatorship proceeding in the event that your child ends up hospitalized as well. So when should you start estate planning? I mean, as soon as you're 18, at least get a power of attorney in place. And then as your assets continue to grow from there, perhaps you have a child or you purchase a home, then that's the time I recommend also putting a trust in place to plan for your long-term well-being.
Right. Once again, you're listening to Protect Your Legacy. Attorney Blake Harris, his number, 833-ASK-BLAKE. And Blake has been kind enough to give our listeners a free initial consultation. So all you have to do is make the call, 833-ASK-BLAKE. And you can check out the website, BlakeHarrisLaw.com. And I highly recommend you do that. A great website. You can read a lot of the reviews that are on there. And Blake, let me just interrupt us for a moment to talk about your reviews. I tell you, people are very, very, very happy with your services. And from the beginning, since we've been doing this show together, they just continue to grow with these 5-star reviews.
Yes, yes. I mean, people ask, why should they work with my firm? And I say, you're going to have a great experience. But I also say, don't just take my word for it. Google Blake Harris Law and read some of the countless number of glowing reviews from current and former clients. We take every client in, and we start the process with a free initial consultation. During that consultation, we're going to learn about your family, how many children you have, are there children from a prior relationship, do we need to plan for any stepchildren as well, or plan around any children. Next, we are going to get a good understanding of your assets. Do you own a home? What liquid investments do you have? Mm-hmm. What do you do for work? And then next, we're going to get a good understanding of our clients' goals, understanding who they want to receive their property, when they want that person to receive the property, and the manner in which they want that person to receive the property. Do they want their beneficiaries to receive an inheritance outright, or they prefer their children receive an inheritance in a protected trust so that the children don't spend through the money too quickly?
Right. We did get go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, and then at the end of that initial consultation, once you get a good understanding of our clients' goals, assets, and family, then we will be able to give our recommendation for how the plan should be designed. And then we will be able to give a flat fee quote for the creation of the estate plan. We offer very competitive pricing. We're not the cheapest ones in town. We don't want to be the cheap attorneys, but we do offer very competitive pricing. We give our clients a very good value when they work with us. About 3 weeks after the consultation, we will have the documents ready for our clients to review and sign. Once the clients let us know that they are 100% satisfied with their documents, we will then schedule a signing meeting. We can either mail you the documents, and you can meet with the notary on your own, hire a notary to come to your home to help you execute the documents, or you're welcome to come into our office. We have beautiful office space in downtown Denver next to Union Station with free parking next door. And then once the documents have all been signed off, we give our clients pre-lifetime reviews. So at any point after you've created an estate plan with our firm, if you have additional questions about your estate plan, whether it's 6 months down the road or 10 months down the road, you can contact our office, and we'd be happy to discuss your estate plan at no additional charge.
Okay, great. And once again, that number is 833-ASK-BLAKE. We did get a text question in the next time that you were on, and so I wanted to save it and ask you. And it says, upon death, how are banks notified that someone passed away normally? And this person said that they had a loved one pass away over a weekend, and like by the very first of the week, they went by the bank, and the bank already knew that the person had passed away. So I'm like, I don't really know either, so I'll ask Blake.
So I'm not sure what happened in that situation.
Okay.
Generally, banks are not automatically informed. Banks are not out there searching death certificate records to find out whether or not somebody passed away. So generally, banks are informed because another family member will report that somebody has passed away.
I got you. And that could have been the case, and they didn't know. Yeah.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. And that might have been the exact situation that occurred. Another family member beat them to the bank to go ahead and freeze the account or stop anything from happening that they may not want to have happen.
Now, if let's say it's the husband's account, the wife is not a signer on it, he dies, she goes to the bank to try to do something with the money, probably can't do that, right?
So it depends.
Okay.
It depends on how much money is in that account. If there is more than $70,000 in the account, then the family will need to go through probate. If there's less than $70,000 in the account, the family can use what's called a small estate affidavit, which allows a family to avoid probate. The only time that you can use a small estate affidavit is if there's less than $70,000 in the account and there's no real estate in the estate.
Okay.
If there's more than $70,000 or $1 worth of real estate, then the estate is going to have to be probated. But if you have got a very small estate, you could pass that property without going through probate by using a small estate affidavit.
All right. Now, I brought up the graduation thing. Well, a lot of kids did graduate this summer, and congratulations to all. But what would you say parents need at minimum, you know, before they send their kids off to college this fall?
I think incapacity documents are wise, financial, medical power of attorney, the HIP authorization, the living will, and then even just a simple will. I don't necessarily think a trust is necessary. It's unlikely that a child would pass away. However, if they do, car accidents are a common cause of death among younger individuals, and when that happens, there could be a large payout from a personal injury settlement. In which case, having an estate plan in place so that those funds go to the parent or the parents properly without any hiccups could make that very difficult moment a little bit easier. So I would say putting together a power of attorney document as well as a simple will would probably be the right fit for any minors out there looking to anyone who's just coming of age.
All right. Once again, you're listening to Protect Your Legacy. 833-ASK-BLAKE is the number, and we are talking with estate planning attorney Blake Harris. So what makes up, I guess, what we'll term a will-designated estate plan?
So what makes up a will-designated estate plan? So estate plans can be one of two things, generally speaking. They can either be will-based or they can be trust-based.
Okay.
And so the question then becomes, well, when should I use a will or when should I use a trust? And many people want me just to throw out a number. If you have more than $200,000, you need a trust. Well, it's really not that simple. I mean, that is something that I will factor in when determining my recommendation. But the first thing I look at when I determine whether to recommend a will or a trust is who are the beneficiaries. If the beneficiaries are your own children, you want to pass as much money as possible to your own children. And if you have to spend $1 to save $5 for your children, I think most of us parents would take that bet.
Mm-hmm.
So if somebody owns real estate or they have children, then I'd often recommend that they set up a trust. Now, if the beneficiaries are simply a charity, not a family member, something that you may believe in or support, but would rather save yourself a dollar than donate an extra dollar while you're alive, what you can do is set up a will-based plan. I actually had a couple in my office a little while back who were worth about $8 million, husband and wife, no children, no grandchildren, no other family members they plan to leave their property to. They just wanted to leave their money to the Denver Dumb Friends League or some other charitable organization.
Okay.
What I told them was, you can set up a last will and testament and just let the Dumb Friends League, let the charitable organization be the one to pay for the probate costs. Save yourself a little bit of money. Let the charity pay the probate costs, because after you pass away, they're going to receive the rest of your money, so they're going to be happy to pay the probate costs. So, again, it's a case-by-case situation, but generally if somebody has children, I'll probably be steering them towards the trust-based plan.
I gotcha. Okay. Now, and the whole idea of all this, and I guess most people probably understand this, but you're trying to preserve the value of their assets, reduce unnecessary taxes and expenses as well, right?
Absolutely.
Okay. And this question's also here. It says, if I have a living trust, do I still need a will?
So this is a very common question, because when we create a revocable living trust, we always back it up with a last will and testament as well. Last will and testament is just another term for a will. So, yes, when you have a will, you should also have a trust in place. Now, if you have a will, you don't necessarily also need a trust. But if you have a trust, you should also have a will as a backup safety net. And this is where we're going to segue into talking about funding for a moment.
Okay.
When you create a trust, you will also need to make sure that you transfer property into the trust. So in order to transfer property into the trust, it depends on what type of asset you have. If you have real estate, you can sign a deed, and that deed will transfer property into the trust. If you have a bank account, you can transfer that bank account into trust by retitling it, opening up a bank account in the name of the trust, or what you can do is simply update the beneficiary designation on that financial account to name the trust as the beneficiary. Next, you have tangible personal property. For any tangible personal property, you want to sign an assignment that transfers all of your tangible personal property into your trust. When selecting an estate planning attorney, it is vital that you ask the question, is funding included with the creation of the trust? One of the biggest mistakes that people make is they create these great estate plans. They create a trust, a wonderful trust, but they forget to put the property into their trust. Okay. What ends up happening is that property still needs to go through probate. One of the main purposes of creating the trust or benefits of having a trust is that we can avoid probate. So with the trust, we also want to make sure that we fund it properly. What happens if you forget to fund property into the trust? Well, luckily, you will have also signed a will, or you should have also signed a will, and that will allows you to act as a backup safety net. Yes, it does require the property that the will is transferring to go through probate, but it does ultimately get the property into the trust so that your children can at least still receive protection over their inheritance. So to answer the question, if you have a trust, yes, create a will as well. I will tell a quick war story.
Sure.
A little while back, I had a client who I was working primarily with her daughter. The mom was very old. She was in her final days and her final weeks, and the mother did not, or I was informed, the mother did not want to sign a will. She wanted to sign a trust. Ultimately, I gave my advice that you should sign the trust as a, you should sign the will as a backup safety net. They were insistent that the will was not needed. I said the pricing is the same. Ultimately, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't dunk the horse's head in the water. I think I messed up that expression, but you can't make the horse drink. I always love twisting that expression around. But ultimately, I can prepare documents for clients, but I can't force anybody to sign them. I can be as convincing as possible, but ultimately, it's the client's choice how they want to carry out their estate. Well, ultimately, this client did not sign the trust document, and what ended up happening was mom passed away before they properly funded the trust, and the property ended up getting distributed under the default intestacy laws, and the trust that they hired us to create really ended up being of no benefit to the family. We did give a small discount in handling the probate matter for them to make things easier. But ultimately, they got stuck in probate, and it ended up being a little bit of a messy probate situation. There's some disagreement among the children, and had they just signed a will, it would have made the process much smoother. The children would have received a protective inheritance. In this case, I believe there are about five children. There's only one home being sold with only about $250,000 equity in it, meaning each beneficiary got just about $50,000. It wasn't really a huge sum of money, but it was another good lesson. So when it comes up again next time, again, I'll lead the horse to water, and I'll have one more thing in my arsenal, another story to tell clients. Yes, you do want to sign a trust anytime. You do want to sign a will anytime you sign a trust as well.
All right. Now, is probate a concern only for those with a large estate? Or how does that work?
Sure. So it depends on several factors. As I mentioned, if you have a small estate under $70,000, then probate really is not a concern. If it's under $70,000 and all the property is held is liquid and there's no real estate, then probate really is not going to be much of a concern at all. But as far as when does it become an issue, when is it worthwhile to really avoid probate, I say if you own real estate, because real estate generally has to go through probate if there's not a joint owner or beneficiary deed in place. That's when I'm going to recommend that you try to avoid probate. There are costs and fees, court fees associated with probate that are standard. So if you have a very large estate, by percentage, the probate fees may be smaller. But if you have a smaller estate, the probate fees may actually eat up a larger percentage of it. So really, I mean, if there's more than $70,000, then I would try to avoid probate. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily something that very large estates need to worry about, but certainly the larger the estate, the more important it is to avoid probate. And another key element to consider, another key factor that would make probate more of a headache, is if you own any real estate out of state. Because you have to probate in every state that there's real estate. So if you have property across three different states, you've got your primary home in Colorado, and then you've got maybe a rental property or two in different states, you'll have to open up a separate probate in every single state. If you create a trust, you can avoid multiple probates. You can avoid all of the probates with a properly funded and created trust.
All right, good deal. Last couple of minutes here. I know sometimes in some shows where we've covered common mistakes, it's come up where you've talked about, you know, not updating your plan if there's been some life changes, so to speak. Let's hit a couple of those life changes. What would make someone need to update maybe their current plan?
Sure. So the biggest reasons that people need to update their plan, number one, is either a marriage or a divorce. The default laws state that if there's a marriage, the new spouse can take an intestacy share, or if there's a divorce, then it's assumed that you no longer want your former spouse to receive any of your inheritance. You will want to be very careful in how you do your estate planning if you are marrying somebody who has children from a previous relationship, or you come into the marriage with children from a previous relationship. A big portion of my business is helping blended families. Blended families are the majority of families nowadays, and by having a well-drafted, well-thought-out estate plan, you can save a lot of time, money, and headache for your family after you pass away. So that's one reason that could cause you to need to update it. Also, if you just moved to Colorado, then you should consider having an estate planning attorney review it to make sure that everything is up to date with local law.
Sure.
Also, if there's a birth, if you have a new child or a grandchild, or if unfortunately you become estranged from a family member, or if luckily you reunite with a family member, those are times to consider redoing your estate plan. Or anytime there's a large shift in your assets, if you purchase a piece of real estate, you should make sure that asset gets transferred into your trust. Or if you have upcoming nursing home costs, for example, or a lawsuit or an inheritance, if there's a large change to your assets, those would also merit a review and update to your estate plan.
All right, Blake. Wow, our time always goes so quickly, but we thank you for your time and your expertise. Folks, hey, look, it doesn't take long to listen to Blake and know this is all he does. This is his specialty, and he's standing by to help you now. 833-ASK-BLAKE. You've been listening to Protect Your Legacy. And Blake, last comment I have real quick. I had a guy the other day talking about it. He goes, man, I can't believe, you know, Christmas being a few months. He goes, what do you think is the best thing I could do for my family? And that was his exact question. And I said, call 833-ASK-BLAKE and get an estate plan. And truly, that is the best gift someone could do for their family, isn't it?
I certainly agree. It's a gift that you will never get to see them receive, but they will be thankful when the time comes.
Absolutely. Well, Blake, hey, bud, thank you so much, and we'll look forward to our visit next show.
Okay, sounds good. Great speaking with you, Scott. Have a great day.
You as well. Again, it's attorney Blake Harris, blakeharrislaw.com. Hey, don't wait. Go check out the website, read those reviews, and then call Blake, 833-ASK-BLAKE. Thanks for being with us today for Protect Your Legacy.
Want to keep making your 30-year payment but own in 15 years? Want to be able to access your equity for future needs and not pay for it now? Take AIM, Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. We have been showing Coloradans how to own their home in less time without changing their 30-year payment. Home values are at the highest in their history. Take advantage of being able to access your equity for 10, 20, 30 years without making payments now. Take AIM, 720-895-0500. Worried about inflation? Everything getting too expensive? Learn how to be able to access your equity without having to refinance and pay closing costs over and over and over. Do it once and you're good for 30 years. Affordable Interest Mortgage, 720-895-0500. Tired of paying too much interest to own your home? Stop! Learn how to lower your total interest cost, 720-895-0500. Locally owned and operated since 2001, and where it's all about you is not just our motto, it's who we are. NMLS 298-191, regulated by DORA.
Hi, this is Scott Watley, your host of Haystack Help and Sportsman of Colorado Radio, right here on KLZ 560. We will be having gubernatorial candidate Greg Lopez with us on both of our shows throughout this election season. Follow Haystack Help Radio and Sportsman of Colorado Radio Facebook pages, and we'll be letting you know the exact dates and times that Greg will be with us. Greg Lopez knows what it takes to manage a family, a small business, and a government. Greg is ready to listen to the needs of the people of Colorado and execute his strategy as governor that will help all Coloradoans reach their full potential and live their best Colorado life. For more information on the Lopez for Governor 2022 campaign, follow Lopez for Governor 2022 on Facebook or visit Lopez2022.com.
Riding an e-bike will make you feel like a kid again. Just try it. Hi, I'm Randy Kranzi, founder of eBike of Colorado. E-bikes are a fun way to ride the trails. Pedal Assist technology flattens the steepest hills. We have 14 major brands to choose from, and our expert staff will find you the perfect bike. Come take a free test ride at eBike of Colorado in downtown Louisville next to the historic grain elevator. Open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. Learn more at ebikeofcolorado.com. Just try it.
This is KLZ 560 AM, your home station.
This is Gregory Bloom at Food Chat. Welcome to Food Chat. Food Chat is a new show about all things food. Every Wednesday, here, same time, same place, talking about growing food, harvesting food, processing food, cooking food, all things food. Maybe the most fun is how to eat food. And we'll be interviewing this summer during this show farmers, ranchers, food processors, chefs, restaurant owners, and a lot of other people that are stakeholders in the food industry. I think you'll learn a lot from this show and learn from my 30 years experience selling food and working in six different USDA food plants that process food. You can send questions and comments by going to my website, gregorybloom.com, and find out information about past shows and future shows here on Food Chat. Today, I have a guest, special guest, that I would like to introduce to you, and we're going to talk is John Jaramillo. John is the co-founder of the Colorado Hispanic Restaurant Association and also the Colorado Hispanic Chefs Association. And John has a co-founder, Celine, and she's not with us today, but I will have her on with John with a future show. But John, would you tell us a little bit about your background and why you and Celine thought it was a good idea to start the Colorado Hispanic Restaurant Association?
Yes, certainly. Well, number one, thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it and allowing us to tell our story. But I grew up in Colorado, so I'm a Colorado native. I graduated from Windsor High School way back when, and then I went into the military for 20 years, served in the U.S. Navy for 20 years, and came back to Colorado about 18, 19 years ago, and love it. I loved everything about being in the Navy, serving our great country. And then now we started the Hispanic Restaurant Association. We started it because we wanted to give a platform to not the owner or the restaurant name, but the staff, the chefs, and the staff behind it. And we wanted to give them a platform to kind of, you know, the Hispanic community kind of makes up about 50-60% of the restaurant community. But there's that kind of a language and sometimes cultural barrier. We want to overcome that and through some of our initiatives. And we founded it to, once again, give a platform to the chef and the staff and help make everyone work together better.
Yeah, I sell restaurants all across this great state products. And I would say, John, from my experience, well, I call it dragging the bag, but sampling chefs over the last 30 years in the food service industry, you know, half the time or more, the chef I'm meeting with is of Hispanic origin. And so I know it's important, and I really, really admire and think what you're doing is serving a great need. And before I forget, John, I just want to thank you for serving our country in the Navy, and I just love the veterans. My dad was one, and I just appreciate that. John, what are some of the challenges that your chef members and your restaurant owner members are facing right now in this current economy that you're trying to help them with?
Well, one of the biggest ones is staffing. Because there's just not enough people, so we have to provide a platform so everybody can talk to one another. We can't name the names yet, but we're partnering with a national technology company to help solve that issue. So if there's a worker in California that wants to come to Colorado or just geographically not here, if they can see that there's an opportunity somewhere they may not be, or the restaurant worker or the staff or the owner, they or restaurant group, they want to see, oh, who's out there? Is there a singular platform for that? And we'll help provide training to upskill them, to help get them to the point where they're, instead of just being a pulse coming to the industry, they have some a little bit of training behind them. They understand the restaurant culture. They understand the restaurant industry. So that's one issue.
I'm going to pause you there, John. I think that is so important because as I work with restaurants, I see number one, they all have a first, help wanted sign up in the window. Or if you talk to their general manager and say, are you hiring? Like, of course, we're always hiring. None of them are fully staffed. I mean, you even see signs now that said, we're sorry that your service is lacking here today, but we are short staffed, and everybody gets that. So you just wait a little bit longer. But also, they're so overtaxed right now because the managers themselves are working the line, and even the executive chef, which typically had time to meet with me at 2 o'clock after lunch for a little meeting, and we could talk about their new menu or some new products I want to show them or whatever, they're now on the line. They don't have the time to train their own people. So I think what a huge service you're going to be able to help with those restaurants. Okay, so other than staffing, what other challenges are you helping them with?
One of them would be the language barrier that we see. As we mentioned earlier, the Hispanic Latin community makes up a significant part of the industry. There's always that kind of that language barrier that's you and I both know of, but we're just trying to solve it. So we partnered with Community College in Denver, and we're working with another large technology company to develop the Food and Beverage Language Institute. It's going to be a hybrid tool where it's going to be classes on their phone, but we're also going to have office hours available through instructors. And this will be eventually be a nationwide platform to where we can develop lower the cultural barriers and the language barriers there. And we're also, as part of that, coming out with the Spanish for Leaders program to where we're going to help the GMs, the staff that doesn't speak Spanish, at least get some basics down so they can communicate. And it'll really help lower that cultural barrier because they're going to start understanding one another.
Wow, that's important. I when I was in college, John, you don't know this, but when I was in college, I taught English as a second language at a private school in Los Angeles, actually in Van Nuys when I was going to college. And then I went to seminary after I graduated from college and just for a semester to take some classes. But while I was there, I made a pretty good wage teaching English as a second language. And all of my students were from Central America and Mexico. They were all, no one further south than Central America, but actually some from Cuba. But the hard thing for me was just teaching them I taught kind of an advanced level class. Spanish was prohibited in the class. It was all English conversation. But one thing that was hard was preparing them for what industry they were going to go into, because we didn't know what vocab words, what they needed to know. So, but you're specifically teaching people with your Food and Beverage Institute, what kind of vocab and things they need to be able to discuss related to the restaurant industry. So I think that's great. So awesome. I don't know if you want to see anything more about that. I was going to ask you, what other issues?
It's specifically industry focused. So that once again, it helps them. As part of that we're going to have a restaurant training series in both Spanish and English. So that way we'll meet them where they're at. And then they're going to learn English. They're going to learn Spanish. And it'll just be easier process to be integrated into the restaurant culture. And what that allows the GM, the owner, and just the whole restaurant and culinary industry is allows a path of progression. Once we can understand and talk to each other, then now you can run my restaurant eventually or be a general manager or a manager or whatever level you want to be at. It just allows that opportunity.
So I think how this applies to some of the people maybe listening today is if they know of someone that owns a restaurant, and most of us know someone that owns a restaurant, or we frequent restaurants. We all have a list of 5 or 6 or maybe bigger, but me, 5 or 6 restaurants that I frequent on a regular basis that are owned by local families, because I'd really try to find those locally owned restaurants that are Colorado-based and not just support the national chains with my food dollar. But if you know people like that, our listeners could direct them to the Colorado Hispanic Restaurant Association for staffing, language barriers, getting their employees trained, knowing how to speak, you know, English better and way. What other? Maybe that's one other issue you're helping with, John, and then I'll move on to a different question set.
Everybody's having logistics issues, just distribution. So we partner with different companies, such as yourself and, you know, other smaller companies, just to get products to restaurants. Because the broadliners are having difficulty just as much as the small guys. So they have to, we're trying to, through our networks, make sure that the restaurant is served by all these other vendors and distributors. And we have a leadership program called the Five Pillars Leadership Renaissance. Because leadership can solve so many issues. And that's part of going to be part of the Food and Beverage Language Institute. It's just part of our whole ethos of what we're trying to establish in the culinary industry.
Wow. Well, because I own a logistics company that delivers food to restaurants and retail stores, I know all about logistics issues. Number one, we have help issues too. And we all have to have refrigerated trucks to deliver those products cold. And those products use fuel. They use diesel fuel. So we're paying record high prices for diesel fuel. But here's the fun thing that about, it's not fun, but it's difficult. It was kind of funny that, you know, when you sell a restaurant and you ask them when they want their delivery, they all want their delivery in the morning. Why? Because that's when they have the people come in before lunch and they're ready to prep food, cut the salad, cut the lettuce, you know, get everything ready for the day, cut the steaks and just get everything ready before they get into their busy part of their day, which is lunch and then dinner. Well, so it's impossible if a food service distributor, my company or any of the other ones, to deliver everybody between 9 and 10 in the morning. Some of them have to get an after lunch delivery. Some of them have to get an early evening delivery. Some of them have to get a really early 5 a.m. morning delivery, which they don't like. So that is tough. Logistics is really tough, and I'm glad that you're helping your members understand that and work through that. Hey, John, I want to just change to a different set of questions for you. Can you tell us about some of the restaurants that are your members that people might be able to both know about and also frequent their establishments?
Yes, I'd love to. That's one of my favorite parts. Excuse me. One of those is Biota. It's at River North at the Source Hotel. Manny Badea, he's the president of the Hispanic Chefs Association. Talk about a epic chef as far as producing food. Just, it's really, really fantastic. Another one is Nomad Taqueria at the Origin Hotel up in Golden. Chef Pablo Aya, he gets all the local products. He has this great venison taco and then just some other dishes that are just, he's really elevated the game there.
That's kind of a new place, John. Before you, I'm just going to pause you there because people may not know that hotel. The Origin Hotel is a newer hotel right off I-70 at the Morrison Road exit. So most people know that interchange because they park their car there and then carpool up the mountains. But at that intersection, if you go north of that intersection, just north west of that interchange at I-70 Morrison, there's a beautiful hotel there called the Origin Hotel, which is a locally owned hotel. And inside there is a great restaurant. And that's where that's where the Nomad Taqueria is. Am I right, John?
Yes, it's in part of the hotel. Yes, it's a great place. I mean, it's just a fun place. It's beautiful. They have a little great courtyard. I mean, it's pretty. I have, when I'm coming back from the mountains, I'll stop in there. One, I like I know the chef, and then, but it's great food. I mean, another one is, this is a European. It's a little bit different. It's Cracovia up in Westminster area. One of our chefs, part of the Colorado Chefs Association, Chef Rudy Elsner, he produces some great Eastern Polish food. I love that place.
Eastern Polish food. What a niche. And it's called Krukovia.
Eastern European.
Oh, yeah, Eastern Krukovia. European food. Okay.
Yeah. And then the last one is a food truck. He just recently was the chef at Shanahan, Zuri Rezendev. He was the executive chef at Shanahan's, just recently departed that and opened his own concept called Luchador Food Truck. And it's Luchador, Luchador, foodtruck.com is where he just launched it a couple weeks ago. But you met him at the Bean Summit.
Yeah, I did. And I want to lead into the Bean Summit and the chef competition that we did there in March. But before I do that, so if people want to eat off Chef Zuri's food truck. Is his food truck going to be parked at a certain place that they can find, or would they go and find him and request his food truck to come to their workplace? How does that work? Do you know?
They can do both. He has a his website is luchadorfoodtruck.com. That's the place where they can do that.
John, I'm going to just back up. You're saying luchador food truck.
Yes.
Okay.
L-U-C-H-A-D-O-R foodtruck.com.
Just like it sounds. Luchador then, food truck. Okay.
Yep. And the same thing. He's also on Instagram. I know that. That's where I get a hold of him. So he's part of the Colorado Food Magazine, our podcast there.
We're going to talk about that next, but I just want to say that I was able to see some of the members in the Colorado Hispanic Restaurant Association in action at a event we sponsored at MedPron State University in early March. It was called the Colorado Bean Summit, and the challenge of the chefs were they had to take beans that were grown in Colorado and they had to make them look sexy. They had to kind of up the game for beans, because beans are kind of boring, right? But they had to do something exciting with beans, and boy, did they perform. I think they blew the windows off of everybody's expectations, and we had 9 News there. They did a segment on it. We had the Denver Post there. We had 5280 Magazine there. It was just a great event, and I got so much positive feedback from everybody in attendance that said they had no idea of the quality of the talent of these chefs in Denver from all over the area, but a lot of them are from Mexico, a lot of them are from Central America, and this is like rock star talent. This is like Food Network talent. These people live and work amongst us, but we don't know they're there because they're kind of below our radar. So it was just an awesome way to see these guys bring their A game to be visible to the general public.
Yeah, and you're exactly right. You nailed it. I couldn't have said it any better, because we want to give a platform to those chefs. Not the restaurant owner or the restaurant name, but to the chef. And that's the Hispanic Chefs Association. And, you know, we talk about, we had the nation's first Hispanic Top Chef last year in November. We're going to have this year's on October 15th of this year. It'll be open to the general public, at least on a limited schedule, but scale. But we're going to have the Hispanic Top Chef 2022 on October 15th. And MSU. So yeah, it'll be streamed live too.
Yeah, and I want to get into some of the events that are open to the general public, meaning the listeners of this show could come and see and experience what you and I are talking about. Before I do that, I just want to give a plug for our sponsor, RanchFreshMeats.com, because we do sell high-quality meats vetted out from farmers, ranchers, and USDA plants that I, Greg, know personally. But we also sell Colorado Proud, Colorado source, Colorado grown beans, which is why we had sponsored this event, because people don't know, John, that Colorado is the sixth largest bean producing state in the nation, right? We're in the top six. Anytime you're in the top 10 for any food production item, you know, you're doing a lot of production. So especially pinto beans. So all these local chefs that you work with that are all typically from countries where they eat a lot of beans, they can buy local beans. So that's why we had plugged into the event. So people can go to ranchfreshmeats.com and go through all the steaks and great things that we have, and they can also buy pinto beans, yellow beans, garbanzo beans, black-eyed peas, even white rice from ranchfreshmeats.com. So back to, John, the events that the general public, the people listening to this show, can go to your website, and I want you to tell everyone your website and maybe talk about some of these events they can go to, a little bit about the events that are coming up this summer.
Yes, a couple of them. Well, a couple of them are going to be fundraisers, but I'll put that on the website. But all of it will be on HispanicRestaurantAssociation.org, everything I'm talking about. But one of the best ones is the Hispanic Top Chef. That's October 15th, Metropolitan State. We also, in August, we're going to have the Meat on Fire Festival. The ultimate barbecue, all things meat. It's going to be epic. That's one. And then next year, we're going to have an all things Colorado food showcase. And that's just every, from fruits and vegetables to grains to meats to everything that is grown in the Colorado food ecosystem, we're going to have it at this show. And the date time frame, it's going to be February, March, but that's when we're going to hold it. But it will be all things Colorado food, And it'll also, if you listen to the Colorado Food Magazine podcast, you'll hear a lot about it on that.
Okay, so just to recap for everyone, that if they want to know more about any of these events, they would go to HispanicRestaurantAssociation.org, and they'll be able to see these events. And the events that you mentioned were America's Top Chef, Colorado Top Hispanic Chef, and All Things Colorado. I just want to tell everyone that these are not like kind of low quality, low production events. This would be like you were invited to go to Los Angeles to a studio in Burbank, and you're allowed to see some of the top chefs in the nation that you might see on the Food Network. But they're famous, but here they're not. They're like locally known, and they're locally very well respected and held in high regard, but the general public doesn't know about them because they're working in the back of the house, or they're new to the restaurant, or they just don't, people don't get a chance to meet the chef that's cooking all the food. So this would be just a great experience to come see some like Hollywood quality chef talent right here in our own backyard.
That's exactly right. And thank you for mentioning that. We talked to, we're going to help produce America's Top Chef next year. That's going to be pretty cool. It's going to be epic. So,
yeah, that's exciting. I can't wait for all this stuff. John, tell me, how do people here's a good question. So we're talking about Hispanic Restaurant Association and the Hispanic Chefs Association. Do you have to be Hispanic to be part of either one of those? So if someone knows a chef or is a chef or people in the food business want to plug into your group and what's going on, do they have to be Hispanic?
No, absolutely not. We don't. Anybody that comes to our doors, we will help, because whether you're in the restaurant industry on any level or in the food service industry and the Colorado ecosystem, there's Latin Hispanics involved, and we all just have to work together. So you do not. I mean, you joined our association. You see how well it's working out as far as what we're doing, and you see the different parts. So you do not. Chefs, come one, come all. That's our philosophy.
Great. That's great. Yeah, that's great. Well, so that answers my question. I've gone to a couple of your events. I have seen some of your members there that are not of Hispanic origin. Why do you think, this is kind of a no-brainer question, very common sense question, but why a Hispanic Restaurant Association and not a Asian American Restaurant Association organization? Why did you focus on that one group, the Hispanic, you know?
Well, number one is the Latin Hispanics and Mexicans. We make up a significant part of the culinary industry.
Right.
I love the culinary industry. Food breaks down all barriers. And so I just want to give a platform to the chef, to the worker, to whoever wants to be involved in elevating the game and giving a platform to the people that need it. And so that's why we started there. But as you mentioned earlier, come one, come all. We'll help anyone that walks through the doors. I'm a 20-year military guy. We all bleed the same, and I know that. And then there's just, if you listen to the Colorado Food Magazine, we have a couple cool guests there. We talk about lowering the barriers in food, and even on the battlefield. There's Chad Smith, who was a member of Delta Force, and then we have Zach Wallace, who was a member of a Marine unit that served in Afghanistan and Iraq, both respectively. And they talk about how food lowers all barriers. And I feel the same way. You feel the same way. It's one thing on, you know, 100% everybody on the planet have in common, food. And when we want to get to know somebody better, what do? You invite them over for dinner.
Right. Break some bread. Right. You know, I've talked to some of the members of your organization at events, and, you know, I asked them about their background and how did they learn about food and how did they learn to love the culinary art, you know, and it's so many of them, you know, they grew up in Central America, or they grew up in one chef, and I'm thinking of Colombia, at Nomad Taqueria.
Pablo's
from Colombia. He grew up, you know, in the food business and learning to love food. And his family actually makes cheese from a dairy that they own in Colombia. So he learned how to do all these cool things with cheese. And he and other chefs, you know, they didn't go to a culinary academy. They don't have a $100,000 degree with a plaque to hang on the wall to say that they're a chef, but they They've grown up with it. And the things that they learn to do with food are different than if they had grown up here, because they have different kinds of food there. And back there, honestly, from what I've seen, one of my trips down there, they're closer to food production, to the actual where the food is sourced from, the ranch, the farmer, the plant. They're making their own cheese. They're just a little bit less disconnected than a typical American chef here. And it's not their fault. It's just the way, but they just have this passion for food and bringing it to the table. And I just love talking to these guys because they're just so passionate about what they do.
Yeah, the flavor profiles they bring to our country that we don't know about till now, till we give them this platform and, you know, we want the world to know about, it's simply amazing. It really is. I mean, I could go on and on and on. And I also want to mention Bruto. That's a very high-end, I would call them Michelin starred, but I can't award that. We're new. But he is an incredible chef also. Chef Michael DeLeon at Bruto in downtown.
Oh, Bruto downtown. Okay. And Chef Michael DeLeon at Bruto. That'd be another place to check out. How do you connect, you're doing all these industry events for chefs and working with the chefs and helping them elevate their game and all these things we talked about. But then how do you connect that with the general public and share the message and share the story? And you're doing that through, I believe, your platform of Colorado Food Magazine. Is that a website? Is that an Instagram account? What is that? And explain that to us.
It's all three. We have the Colorado Food Magazine is our digital medium to get the word out. So people can go to, and we can educate them about all the chefs, all the restaurants, what's in the food industry producing, we're going to be producing shows. But we're on Spotify on the Colorado Food Magazine. We're on YouTube under the Colorado Food Magazine Food Show. And also the website, Colorado Food Magazine, which will direct you to everything I'm talking about.
Yeah, so if you want to meet, so if you're listening to this show, Food Chat, hosted by Gregory Bloom, a new food show about all things food, food production, food farming, just everything you would ever want to know and a lot of things you don't know about food production, then you want to go to gregorybloom.com and come back here every week through the summer, Wednesdays at 12:30, to hear me interview a new person that has something to do with food production. Today we have John Jaramillo from the Colorado Hispanic Chefs Association. He was just talking about the Colorado Food Magazine, and that's his way of connecting to you, the general public. And then he interviews chefs and he interviews industry stakeholders and in Denver. Hey, we just have about a minute left, John, and I kind of directed everything by the questions that I asked you. Do you have anything that you want to share that I didn't ask or any closing comments?
I did forget that we're on Instagram, Colorado Food Magazine. Please follow us. Just thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for helping us. Thank you for inviting us on this show. Our goal, our mission and vision is to educate and elevate everyone about the food systems in Colorado and it's, the complexity of it.
It is complex, and I'm so glad to know that you're doing what you're doing, and I'm privileged to be a part, blessed to be a part of the great people in your organization. Hey, today's show was brought to us by Ranch Fresh Meats, a great place to go for locally sourced and premium quality proteins and even beans that we have vetted out, the story, the rancher, the farmer. The difference between us and most other companies that you'd ever buy from is we actually know the families and the farms and the plant owners that produce the products. So we really appreciate your patronage. Summer is a great time to go to our website, ranchfreshmeats.com. We always have promotions. We always have stuff on sale. We always have a new item to get your interest, like this month, Wagyu tri-tips from Dan Morgan's Ranch. Dan Morgan called me a few weeks ago and said, hey, Greg, I'm long on tri-tips. Could you do a special? I'll give you a hot price. We pass it along. You can buy a high-quality tri-tip, Wagyu tri-tip, beautiful marbling from Dan Morgan's Ranch that is awesome on a grill or a barbecue. I got cooking ideas, ranchfreshmeats.com. Hey, thank you for joining us with our new talk, Food Chat, and we hope you'll come back every week this summer to hear us talk about all things food.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of Crawford Broadcasting, the station, management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.